Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Many blessings to you.
So as the mindfulness bell returns to silence, we get to place our attention on that silence within ourselves as well. The Bible admonishes us to be still, and in that still place, we can know that we are that we are the one that knows no other. And so we come to the Center for Spiritual Living to experience our true nature. And what that offers us is a different perception. No longer seeing things through the lens of the local self, we begin to expand our field of awareness. So that life is looking through these eyes. A life that doesn't see itself as separate, but a life that knows that it's all the one life. And so when this mystery of belonging to the universe begins to awaken within ourselves, well, then the transformation is from the me, ultimately to the we, and arriving at the all. It is all the one life. And that one life is awakening within its creation. And we are both the creator and the creation at the same time. And so we play with that awareness. This divine intelligence, this divine love, needed an outlet for its expression. And it chose all of us. So we have to be so humble and meek to claim our divinity this Sunday morning. So when you're ready to play in the playground of the unmanifest, with nobody special, then you can open your eyes and look at your own self, looking back at you. It's the one life, God's life, and it's everywhere revealing itself. Isn't that just beautiful to realize that that it's all good, it's all God, and it's all here for us? It's all the great mystery. So this month of July, I'm exploring the idea of shifting into freedom. And it's by a book by Locke Kelly, who's a Buddhist teacher. And he says, you shift out of the local self. You wake up from within the dream that you've created. And then you wake into this felt awareness of a connection to something greater. That's where the inquiry would be so helpful. And then you wake out into a world where it's not separate from you, that it's all part of the one life. And you begin to see things with fresh eyes. And you see things through the eyes of oneness. Not through the separate self. My teacher, one of my many teachers, is a man named Llewellyn Van Lee, who comes from the Sufi lineage. And this is one of his newer books. It's called For the Love of the Real. And Llewellyn talks about how the absolute is waking up, and it needs all of us to be its instrument of revelation. And here's how he so beautifully talks about this oneness. And, you know, in The Science of Mind, Dr. Ernest Holmes says, one, one, one. If we teach anything, we teach oneness, all capital letters. Whoa, I think we need to go to oneness, don't you think, Phil? So here's what Llewellyn says. He says, through our awareness, we catch this moment, both transient and eternal. We are present at this moment where form is born out of emptiness. And so much of what spiritual reality is, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. We tend to identify with the form, but really it's the emptiness within the where all the juice is. So he's pointing that out. This moment of blossoming, our awakened awareness serves the absolute by recognizing our true nature as oneness and yet appearing in the relative form. So we're a relative being and yet we're an absolute being. Could we find that relationship within ourselves? Llewellyn is asking. So just as we can recognize the void as part of the multidimensional reality in which we live, so too can we know and live this oneness of the absolute, the dimension of the self with a capital S, or our soul. Dare I use the S word, soul. And just as there are ways to work with the energies of the void, Mr. Seamus, there are ways to work with the energies of oneness as well, which includes a freedom that is independent of power dynamics, which includes a love that flows where it is needed, and which includes a unifying presence beyond any duality. So he's talking about it as oneness, as a presence, as divine love, and as a power that doesn't appear like we think it's the power would be. It's this internal power. One cannot do this work without the attitude of service. It was Ram Dass who said, my ministry boiled down to three things. I am here to love, to serve, and to remember. To remember that all there is that, and I'm an expression of that. To love, knowing that God is love, and love is a verb. And then to serve, we're just serving ourselves. Every time we water a plant, every time we tend anything, we're really tending our own self. So this attitude or state of servanthood comes not from a place of being separate from the absolute, but from a place of being one with it. Union is the very secret of servanthood, in all capital letters. Union is the very secret of servanthood. As Ibn Arabi said, through the real nature of service, we live from a place of oneness, even if initially we are not fully conscious of it. In time, with grace, awareness of unity dawns within. With time and grace, the awareness of unity dawns within, and the boundaries of separation and duality dissolve in the energy of love and the light of oneness. It all dissolves in the energy of light and the energy of oneness. And then he quotes Rumi, and I'll end with this. Rumi said, my servant ceases not to draw nigh unto me by works of devotion until I love him. This is the beloved speaking about us. My servant, that would be you and me, ceases not to draw nigh unto me, the beloved, by works of devotion until I love him. And when I love him, I am the eye by which he sees and the ear by which he hears. When the lover and the beloved become one, well, then the perception is coming from the one. The beloved is looking through our eyes. Life is so interesting how it gives us these beautiful, I call them abgos, another bloody growth opportunity, or you could say another blessed growth opportunity, depending on how you want to refer to it. And the abgo of yesterday night was a little baby squirrel that had had his ear removed somehow, and the flies were eating it, and he was circling, doing little circles by the water bowl, and I'm trying to tend this little creature of divine love. And, of course, I went and told my husband about it. And he says, why are you telling me about the squirrel? Well, because you like to fix things. And so he went out there, and the next thing you know, the little baby squirrel's in a paper bag, and he's curled up in a little ball, and he's by the back door. And so I went out this morning to see if the little squirrel's in the bag, and there he be. And I got our animal ministry, Jody. She's going to come over and see if we can help this little squirrel. But what if life gives you those little opportunities to serve, to love? To not turn a blind eye and saying, oh, it's just a squirrel without an ear. No, it's a little squirrel doing circles right in front of me, saying, help me, help me. I know I'm a little squirrel and I climb trees, but I can't get my bearings. I'm And so I said, okay, I'll do what I can. And that's life. Yeah, I'm speaking this Sunday about if another world is possible. And this is the fifth in a series of five talks about how we can shift into freedom, to shift out of the local self into a perception of oneness. And the first week I spoke about courting the question. There's a beautiful Hebrew saying that says, why disturb a beautiful question with an answer? Just hang out in the question. So what if the question is, how might spirit reveal itself in a more dynamic way, Phil and David, and then live in that question? How might I fulfill oneness's desire on planet Earth in this humble little position in Huntsville, Alabama? And then you wait upon the Lord. You wait upon this revelation to come through you. So we have a conversation with the divine always going on. Could we get intimate with our own revelation by living in the question? The second week I spoke about, what did I speak about the second week? Adam should remember. The second week, I talked about how there is a web of knowing throughout all creation, and we're a part of that web of knowing. We have an intelligent universe. So could we learn to take communion or darshan with a tree, with a plant, with an octopus, because it's all the one life revealing itself in its beautiful mystery of belonging to the universe. So then we aren't the superior species on planet Earth, but we can actually have communion with all the 10,000 things. And then you hear the Tao, the Tao. All is the Tao plus the 10,000 things. And it's all the Tao. And it appears in the 10,000 things. So could we, as a metaphor, begin to see that this is the face of God everywhere in this web of knowing? Now, where does that knowing come from? It doesn't come from the programmed literal mind. In fact, I'm given an image of Joseph Campbell tapping his head like this. And he says, you humans seem to think that all the answers are going to come from this minor organism that you have up here. He said, this isn't where the knowing comes from. And he talks about the wisdom of the heart, because the heart can know oneness. So then you hear His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who has a phrase called the bodhicitta, where you put the head and the heart together. It's called open-hearted awareness, and that's what's going to change the world. When we begin to have an open-hearted awareness with all the 10,000 things, they're all our relations. It's all the Great Spirit, and these are all part of the oneness. So that's that web of knowing that begins to wake up within us. The third week I spoke about it's larger than ourselves. In fact, it isn't about you. My teacher, Llewellyn, used to say, it's not about you. It's never been about you. So it's so funny. Our teaching is a transformational teaching that seems to have its roots in self-help. Every transformational idea, like even the visioning process that Michael Beckwith gave us, where you ask the question, how would the universe have itself made manifest through this life? Well, then through lowly listening, you don't ask your egoic self, well, it would mean that I would do this and this and this, and I'd have a letter of golds. No. You get to ask this divine presence how you would have it revealed to you in a fresh new way, and it's always fresh. Somebody, I believe it was Joanne, that said, and you never get to the destination. You're always dealing with this construct called you or me, and ultimately, in that beautiful book by a quantum physicist called The Story of Gaia, she says there's entropy moves into entropy. Entropy is this awakening within, this web of knowing. It's much larger than the individual. So then we stop making it about ourselves and creating a better dream or the illusion of me, and we start participating in a conversation with life. This life that is intelligent, this life that is alive, and it's living within us. So could we find the aliveness right here instead of looking out there? This month's Science of Mind magazine, it's a tribute to Dr. Ernest Holmes, and it gives one of his last talks when he was at Asilomar, and it's called The Exaltation of the Presence. And Ernest Holmes, who is a mystic, talks about us as the inlet and outlet for this oneness to be revealed. And because Ernest Holmes was at a time in America when Christianity was the primary religion, he would use references to the Christ, not as Jesus' last name, but as that presence that awakens within us. He says you can also call it the Atman. Hinduism says all is the Brahman and the Atman. The Atman is the soul. The Brahman and the Atman are one. Whatever your reference point is, the Buddha consciousness is the Christ consciousness. So here's Dr. Ernest Holmes at Asilomar. He says, there is no mediator between God and man, but the Christ itself. the Christ within us all. I remember we had a pilgrimage of the different religions, and one Sunday we had the Muslims up here, and they say, if you surrender to Allah, you are a Muslim. I said, you mean I'm a Muslim because I'm surrendering to God? Yeah, you're a Muslim. The next week we had the Christians, and they said, if you have Jesus as your personal savior, you're a Christian. I said, is it not enough to know that the Christ lives within us all? No. And I said, oh, so I find out one week I'm a Muslim and the next week I'm not a Christian. Well, whatever. Ernest Holmes. Christ is within you. And if you had been a Hindu, you would have said the Atman is within me. There is no mediator between the absolute and the relative, but your own self. You are the way. So we got to tap in to who we are. No man hath seen God. Only the Son has revealed the Father, and we are that Son. This is Dr. Ernest Holmes doing his rather erudite preaching, but you know, he was, I believe this is in the 1950s. The adoration of this transcendence in us is automatically the adoration of God. When you adore this something within you, this invisible something, well, then you're adoring the God within. Ernest Holmes. The adoration and the recognition of this divine incarnation is the adoption and the recognition of God, of the eternal, the adoration and the recognition in the only place that it can possibly take place, that is within you, and that is within me. Well, I think it's an inside job. What do you think, Kelly? You got to find it within yourself. We can look the whole world over, but if you haven't found it in here, you're not going to find it. That was Emerson said, you can look the whole world over for happiness, but if you're not carrying happiness within you, you're not going to find it out there. You might say the same thing with God. You can look the whole world over for God, but if you haven't found it within here, and when you find it within, guess what? You see it everywhere mirrored, because it's all the one reflecting itself. Little Ernest Holmes. He says at the very end of this little sermon he gave, before I was born and after, they shall have laid away that which remains or cremated it, which I believe in. Well, I will still be here, he said, even after I'm cremated. Then he quotes, the sun across its course may go. The ancient river still will flow. I am and still I am. I am and still I am. Dr. Ernest Holmes. So the I am doesn't go anywhere. Even in death, he's still here. This lovely little expression of how oneness can manifest in the world. In this lovely little issue this month, they're talking about returning to a flow in our lives. Some of us who might have gotten stagnant and asking the questions, how can I revitalize? Maybe it's cleaning out those drawers, Miss Paula, which will start in a new direction. And so they ask these questions. How does the idea of a new beginning fit into your life right now? Well, I think we sit with that question, Mr. Adam. A new beginning? The second question, what expanded possibilities are you being guided and invited or nudged even to consider? Some greater ideas that might be nudging you, a greater sense of self-expression. Maybe you're going to take that sound bath this Thursday night and let that sound wash over you so you can discover something that's waiting inherently within you. What risks, the third question, what risks are you called to take that are aligned with your deepest heart's desire? Take some risks. Take that workshop that makes you feel good. Maybe take that dance class to you that sets your soul free. It was Gabriel Roth that wrote a lovely little book called Sweat Your Prayers. And it's basically saying you can dance your troubles away and you can find liberation through your body. And I went and studied with Gabriel Roth and danced, sweated my prayers. The next question, what do you want to do with your life? Well, I think that's an ongoing question, Phil. We could live in that one. What do you want to do with your life? How about live it to its fullest? I was listening to a Deepak Chopra tape. Mark Accomando sent it to me. It was about the insanity of the human species, how our planet is literally on fire. And we have the capacity to change the global warming thing. We have the technology. And Chopra says, what kind of a species are we when we know we can save ourselves and save this planet and yet we don't do it? But then Chopra, in his wisdom, he's come to this, he's like close to 80 now, and he said, I've realized, what do you plan to do with your life? He says, the first thing is to have joy, to get up in the morning and to do what brings me joy. This is Deepak Chopra, The second thing, he says, make sure you have joyful people in your world, because there's nothing worse than not having joyful people. And then he said, and the third thing is, if you come to the end of your life and you haven't enjoyed it, well, then you really haven't lived your life. Well, I think Deepak's getting kind of fun there at his dotage. We're here to have fun, to enjoy the life that you've been given. So going on to this refurbishing of our, find a quiet time and a place. This is how you can reboot your life at whatever stage. Find a quiet time and place, and then ask yourself the following questions, and be sure to write down the responses spontaneously that come from within. Well, I'm just throwing this out there. If another world is possible, it's got to happen through you, in your world. So here's the questions that you get to sit with. What is Spirit's highest vision for my life's purpose? This is right out of Michael Beckwith. What is Spirit's highest vision for this life's purpose? Paul's would be probably to change the nutritional ways people see and to create this relationship with food and Mother Nature. And she's nodding her head. Yeah, so she's found a connection with all of this. It's not, I love it when Raul had these rashes over his body. She came with a natural cream that she'd gotten right from her own garden. Now, that's a cream that I want to use. So what is Spirit's highest vision for my life's purpose? The second question, what must be released to bring that vision into reality? You know, We want to be free, but we don't want to let go of the very thing that binds us. So could we observe what it is that I'm going to need to let go of if this new vision is going to manifest in my life? Sometimes we might need to end a relationship. Sometimes we need it. You know, I had a job in New York that I said, this job is killing me. This job is killing me. And someone said, well, why don't you leave it? Oh, I can't leave it. I need this job. And so I ended up in New York City Hospital. My gallbladder burst. And I thought, well, this job is killing me. It came to manifest as a reality. And only then did I leave the job? Isn't it amazing how we have to wait till we're transformation by gunshot? No. What must be released to bring this vision into reality, and what must then be embraced? When you let go, you create a void in your life. I remember when I was in Atlanta, my sweet husband had gotten his master's in education, and he was going to be a school teacher. And so I could go back and get the same master's in education and be a school teacher, and then we would have summers off and we could travel. So I went back to get this degree in education, and I was my first day of student teaching, and the voice within said, this job will kill you. I'd learned to listen to the voice by then. This will kill you. You can't do this. So I went home from the first day of student teaching. Trey came back from school. How did you like your first day there? And I said, honey, the voice within said, this will kill you. So I'm quitting. I'm quitting the whole program. He just looked at me like, you have just taken our dream and dashed it aside. He says, well, whatever you do, don't become a minister. Well, I had been taking classes at that silly little church in Atlanta, had never once thought about it. And you see how one little seed was planted and then the universe took it and ran with it. So you never know what must be embraced. Maybe the universe is there all along trying to get your attention, but we're so enamored with our plan that we don't see what was waiting there in the wings all along. So what needs to be embraced? And is there anything else then you want revealed in your life? You know, it's so wonderful to stay back with the questions. At this stage of my life's revelation, I want it to be fresh, alive, and I don't want a self-help class anymore. I want a class on transformation where I can merge with oneness. You might say I'm a tantric master. I'm going to merge with trees and flowers. Llewellyn, in his new little book, it's simple practices that you can do to align to oneness. And oneness is just consciously walking. And he got this from Thich Nhat Hanh. He says, the miracle is not to walk on water, as Jesus was reputed to have done, or to walk on fire, the big fire walking. He says, the great miracle is to walk on this earth where every step is a blessing. So he talks about mindful walking. And then he talks about mindful gardening. We're all working with a garden. You have a little plant in the window and you tend it. And then the plant nurtures you. You think you're nurturing the plant, but strangely, the plant begins to nurture you. And that's how it begins. Mindful cooking, that when you prepare the food with love, then it's received with love. When Mrs. Tweedy used to cook for Llewellyn, he said she would bring down her Hungarian goulash, and my wife and I just tasted the love that was in the goulash. You can actually taste love. Oh, we're having our breaking bread next Sunday, so bring some love with you, and I'll bring my store-bought carrot cake, and there's love in that because someone crushed the carrots and put the cream cheese frosting on it. And I get to have a little piece of that wonderful, sinful carrot cake that I'm not allowed to eat anymore, but one piece is allowed on Breaking Bread Sunday. So you see, you absolve yourself of any kind of guilt around these hidden pleasures of life. So yeah, so Ernest Holmes is talking about a return to the flow. And in this idea of oneness, the Sufis have a word. Well, it's a science. It starts with tauba. The tauba is the turning of the heart, where you begin to turn toward love instead of fear. There's so many fear-based religions out there. You know, the Judeo-Christian one, the fear of hell and burning in hell. And then there's the Christian message of love, that it's all about love. So could we have a love-based spirituality? And that begins to flower within the field of our awareness. So, what was I talking about? The insanity of the world, and we're here to serve. You know, I love it when the mind goes blank. I worked so hard to get the mind blank, and then when the mind goes blank and you can't remember where you were, well, then you go, ah, I've worked so hard on creating that empty space. And then when that flow of thought, which links to this thought, which links to that thought, it kind of went up like, poof, like Oppenheimer. Speaking of, it's a good segue, Oppenheimer. It's one big nuclear explosion. And if you haven't seen it, it's troubling, and yet it's very spiritual. Because he recognized, this was during right after World War II, that if he didn't develop the atomic bomb, well, then others would develop it, and it could be a disaster for the planet. So as horrific as it was to create an atomic bomb that could destroy the planet, conceivably it was a deterrent. Because if we have something that's so threatening, could we then have the wisdom to not use it? It's kind of crazy, isn't it? We have the technology to destroy the planet, but yet that technology is going to save the planet. That's kind of the Fakakta way of thinking in all of this. So could we embrace the power? We are so powerful, all of us. I mean, we're creating this universe by what we choose to think and declare and believe and know. So what if with that power we could create a world where we would love one another, where we would serve one another, where we wouldn't see differences? I'd like that Lee was telling me about this young Pakistani man in England, who was a victim of the circumstances there, but he let it transform his life, and now he's out serving others. No longer a victim of that perception, but he's turned it around for himself. Aman Matwani wrote a lovely little book called You Can Change the World, and he spoke at a seminar when I was there, and he endorsed the book. And it all is premised on the idea, when you see them in their wholeness, you're calling their wholeness forth. So his son was killed by a gang in Los Angeles, Lee. And so what did he do? He went into the prison and forgave the ones that killed his son, realizing that they were victims of their own environment. So instead of taking on the gangs as the enemy, he embraced them as a part of the wholeness and start to see that they're equally a victim of their circumstances. So it was the circumstances, as painful as they were, ended up changing the way he perceived them. And then he says, when we can all do that, that's how we'll change the world, by seeing the wholeness, by seeing that which is innately good and God within all of us and calling it forth. Isn't it funny how that works? So yeah, I pulled up my John O'Donohue this morning because my twin sister's haunting me, and John O'Donohue haunts me too. He's this Irish Catholic priest who left the priesthood because he said there was too much sin there and I couldn't handle it. So then he became this beautiful mystical teacher, and he died of a sudden heart attack at age 52. But you know, he's the one, he's still here. And so in this lovely book, this was written posthumously, it's called Walking in Wonder. And he talks about when you can live in that place of wonder and awe, that's when you can see through the eyes of oneness. So at the end of this lovely little book, he wrote a little poem called Equilibrium. If a new world is possible, I would like this to be the blessing. And then we'll do the bell and I'll do a little closing meditation. So here's his little poem called Equilibrium. It says, like the joy of the sea coming home to its shore, may the relief of laughter rinse through your soul. Like the joy of the sea coming home to its shore, may the relief of laughter rinse through your soul. Laughter is the greatest medicine. It sets us free. Then he says, as the wind loves to call things to dance, may your gravity be lightened by grace. As the wind loves to call things to dance, may your gravity be lightened by grace. There's a wonderful movie called Zorba. It's about Zorba the Greek. And at the end of that movie, his son dies. And Zorba says, if I do not dance, I shall die too. Because in the dance, he set his soul free of the grieving. It just flashed across my memory. Like the dignity of moonlight restoring our earth, may your thoughts incline with reverence and respect. Like the dignity of moonlight restoring the earth, may your thoughts incline with reverence and respect. The Bible says, whatsoever things are lovely and of good report, think on these things. Rumi says, what you think of love are but subtle degrees of domination and servitude. He says, but true love comes like the moonlight, fully formed in the window. So could we play with the metaphor and discover a love that's like the moonlight that's dancing? As water takes whatever shape it is in, so free may you be about who you become. In Taoism, they say, the power of a glass is the emptiness that the glass holds. The window has value because of its openness. The door has value because it can open. So could we find the emptiness within us as the valuable place to turn? As water takes whatever shape it is in, so free may you be about who you become. And then he said, as silence smiles on the other side of what is said, may your sense of irony bring prospectiveness to you. As silence smiles on the other side of what is said, your sense of irony bring perspective. If you have a problem, call Tia. She'll take care of it. As time remains free for all that it frames, may your mind stay clear of all that it names. As time remains free from all that it frames, you're not a time frame, you're an eternal being. May your mind stay clear of all that it names. If you name something, you limit it. So what if we could let go of all naming, all labeling, and then we'd be free to set ourselves free from a label. It's not good or bad, it just is. His last little stanza, and may your prayer of listening deepen enough to hear in the depths of your being the laughter of God. And may your prayer of listening, a prayer of listening, deepen enough to hear in your depths the laughter of God. Whoa, I think that's a nice place to ring the bell, Jody. So those lovely words of John O'Donohue take me to that place within, to the silent place where the laughter of the universe abides, where the peace that passes all understanding flourishes, where the grace of a smile sets us free of our seriosity. And so as we take the time to enter into the eternal now moment, something that is always already there smiles within us, says, you have arrived, you are home. You've always been home, even though you get distracted by the stuff on the outside. And so we come here to remind ourselves, there's no place like home. There's no place like home. It's right there, within and all around you. And when we claim that we have arrived, well, then we stop searching for someplace else where we will find fulfillment. And we discover that it's right there within the breath, right there, sitting in our chair this Sunday morning. So all our searching stops. And then you hear the master teacher Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas with his very first logian when he says, in all your seeking, he says, seek until you find. And he says, and when you find, you will be greatly disturbed. And when you are greatly disturbed, you will be filled with awe. And when you are filled with awe, you will have dominion over your world. So Jesus is saying, seek until you find. And what you find is going to disturb you, because what you find is that you have had the power all along within you to create your own reality. And you're filled with awe. Oh my God. Just by configuring up a new construct in mind, life can create a new experience. And then you're filled with awe and wonder. And we have dominion over how we respond to each sacred moment that is here for us. Michael Beckwith talks about the four levels of consciousness. The lowest level is the to-me consciousness, where you see yourself as a victim of life. The next highest level up is the for-me consciousness, that life is for me, and even those abgos are here for me. The next highest level is the through-me consciousness, that spirit moves through me and moves through all creation. And so we become a conduit, an avenue, through which love expresses, through which light is revealed, through which wisdom can flower. And then the highest vibration of consciousness, Michael calls the as-me consciousness. Spirit as-me reveals whatever it is that I need to know in this holy instant of now. And so through deep listening, I discover something that is intimate and it's transformative as the smile. If you'd like to place your hand over your heart and join with me in the heart salutation, which says, I honor you.
I honor you.
I bless you.
I bless you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the emerging presence of the one life.
You are
flowering within,
flowering
and all around, and we witness you.
We
celebrate you.
We bow to you.
We are here to serve you.
We are here to express
as you. We are here to experience joy. Joy be our compass. We discover radiant life, unfolding with surprises and joy. And it is wonderful. Full of Derwan. And so it is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.